Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, hello, hello, hello. And so good to have you back for Series 6 of My Mate Bought a Toaster. Thank you very much indeed for subscribing. Thank you for listening. Today's episode, the brilliant Scroobius Pip. He's such a great guest. So good that I've Tim Keyed him, guys. We've turned Tim Key into a verb. I've keyed this guy. We're going to have part one of Scroobius Pip today. And then I'm going to drop part two on Friday this week. So tell your friends. Subscribe and like and review and rate and all that rubbish. And enjoy the show. Thanks for listening.
If this was you, you can disregard the message. Yes, this was. Go ahead.
Let this guy in. I think Amazon have now had so many notifications for this podcast, they should start warning you. Are you doing My Mate Bought a Toaster podcast? Yeah. Click no to cancel this ill-thought-out idea.
If you've changed your mind.
Yeah, exactly.
Please click here.
You do not need this. Your profile is already high enough. You're not even getting paid. What are you doing?
If you're too polite to back out, let us know and we'll block them.
Oh, when I need a laugh, there's a helping people. But don't pass talking to these funny people. He's asking what they're buying and they're telling stories. Can somebody yell out the name of the show, please? It's My Mate Bought a Toaster. Oh, oh. It's My Mate Bought a Toaster. Yeah, yeah. It's My Mate Bought a Toaster. Oh, oh. Toaster for my love. Thank God. Toaster.
All right, welcome along to My Mate Bought a Toaster. Here we are, and this week I am very, very delighted to welcome a podcasting legend and a music legend as well, the brilliant Scroobius Pip. Hello, Scroobius Pip, welcome.
Hello, sir. I'm pleased to be here.
I've already got beard envy straight off the bat. You've always had that strong length to your beard, you know?
Yeah, and since moving into acting, in between roles, I just tend to not get my beard or haircut because yeah. I'd rather they cut it for the character. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like the few times I've had to have my beard extended for a role, yeah. It's a lot of effort and a lot of work and a lot of glue and whatnot. So I'd rather go, right, here's everything. Here's long hair, long beard.
Yeah.
Create the character you want. Here's your canvas.
You're a 2022 Brian Blessed. That's what you are.
Exactly.
You're going in, you've got to go in long. And then they can take it back. To be honest, mate, that's my approach to acting. I go in too big.
Yeah, bring me down.
And then you can just,
bring
me down.
Bring me down. You let me know where you need me.
Have you had the whole thing shaved off for acting gigs?
No, I've wanted to a few times. I did the last Venom film and I really wanted to go kind of big handlebar moustache.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was like, it's the look. But because there's not loads of actors with big beards, I think often... Not that it's getting me the jobs, but often they are going, well, this is different. It stands out. It makes it feel more real because, not a lot of actors have big beards. So
whatever it takes.
I'm dying to, mate.
And also in the age of a self-tape as well.
Yeah.
Because they're going to flick it on. They're going to go, oh, hello, Scroobius Pip. They're going to go, beard. And they're going to go, he hasn't even spoken yet. Fuck it. He's got the gig.
Yeah. And then I speak and I've got a stammer and it ruins everything. So, yeah, it's...
They can edit around that, sort that in post.
The journey of my self-tapes.
Oh my God, I hate a self-tape. All right, so listen, talking of journeys, we're going to go into a journey of your purchase history. All right, Scroobius. So
we are.
Here's the deal. I'm going to go right back to your first ever purchase. So I'm clicking on your orders right now.
I've not even glanced at this. I'm incredibly nervous about it because I've no idea what's in there.
Delightful. All right, so we're going back to 2006. There we are. That's our first purchases. 2006. Okay. Can you remember what you were doing on the 14th of May, 2006?
So 2006 would be just as my music career was started. Okay. Thou Shalt Always Kill came out in 2006. I'd quit my job in HMV in 2005, I think, to try and make it at music.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I've no idea what I would have been doing. But
did you get inspired for that song by working at HMV and telling a series of over serious music people that they were just a band? That was just
yeah.
I mean, is that the tiredness of working behind a counter at HMV in musical form?
there's going to be a level of it, of calming down music nerds, yes, and going, it's all right. There's, I know you're passionate about this, but there was a guy in last week who was equally passionate about Cast. So it's all good. But I also think working in HMV made me hold off on Amazon for a bit, because it was working in retail at that time when Amazon came about. It was a rivalry. It was like, they're the enemy.
Yeah.
They're going to kill the high street. So I think there was an element of, like, I've heard, again, as I've said, I'm a fan of the pod, and I've heard a lot of them starting in 2002, 2003 or whatever. I think there will be an element of going, no, 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 no. But once I'd left HMV, yeah, and when I left, they refused to give me my payoff, my bonus that year, because 1 month of my notice was in the year that the bonus should have been in.
Yes.
So they could get out of, they had a get out clause. So I think after that, I was like,
right,
bring on Amazon.
You've just inspired me to grab some. All right. Okay. So your first act of hostility to HMV came on the 14th of May 2006 when you bought the DVD of The Last Resort. You remember this movie? It cost £19.70. No.
Not really. Who's in it? There's going to be an actor in it I love, I guarantee.
Dina Korzen, Tanya, a vulnerable and naive young Russian, arrives at Gatwick Airport with her 10-year-old son to meet her English fiancé. But when he fails to show up, a distraught Tanya claims political asylum and finds herself virtually imprisoned in a nightmarish refugee holding centre in a lonely seaside resort. Does this ring any bells? Is this?
Do you want me to go and get it off my DVD shelf? God. It's only over there.
You,
it's across the room.
You literally got it. Yeah, come on, let's bring this on to life. Here we go.
Let me go and have a look. Right, I enjoy that.
Yeah, yeah. Good. This is called doing a key now. This is doing a Tim Key, stepping off away from the podcast to go and see what he can find. You can hear him just thumbing through the DVD collection.
And as I pick it up, instantly the mystery is solved as I see Paddy Considine on the front cover.
A much discussed actor on this podcast.
That's that'll be why at that point I'd watched Room for Romeo Brass. I'd been recommended that randomly and it blew me away. And then Dead Man's Shoes.
Dead Man's Shoes. Dead Man's Shoes, mate. Yeah. You're right there.
Yeah. Beautiful, right? See, so yeah, that'll be it. At that point, I was buying everything that Paddy had ever done.
Yeah. He's got that magical thing where, you know, he just... It looks like... Mark Rylance has got it as well. It looks like they're doing nothing.
Yeah.
He's just doing some speaking. It makes acting look... Frankly, it's insulting to people who act, because it makes it look fucking easy, and it's not. It's really hard.
I always remember getting a bit of advice, and this is a big name drop now, but my third ever acting gig, I was lucky enough to work with Tom Hardy, and he really kind of, he took me under his wing a bit, and he was saying, there's a few scenes, he was saying, make bold choices, but don't force them. If you can't think of anything bold to do, do nothing. And the audience will fill in the gaps. And he kind of said there's loads of performances of his where just the camera and the sound and everything else and the even the editing, the thing that the image that came before and the image that comes after has added to him going, I can't think of anything to do is, so I'm just going to do nothing
for an extended
period. But it's beautiful. It was such good advice, because particularly when I had no acting training and all that kind of thing, and when you're on those smaller early roles, you can completely overdo it and try and over egg the pudding, try and make something out of it. But going, right, no, just if you're not the focus of this scene, then just get on with your life as such. Think about stuff.
It's
think in character.
Yes.
But just think, and that's all you need to be doing.
The hardest thing to do, and this is a part that I've often had in my acting career, is the turn up for a day or two, small cog, important cog for the plot, but really no artistic license to do anything. And everyone's looking at you like, mate, you just need to ask him the question so he can explode and be motivated to do the next part of his journey. And if you don't ask him that question, well, we're all fucked. And there's nothing, you're really trapped. And I've always likened it to playing the triangle at the end of the orchestra. It looks like it's just that. That's all you got to do. But it's the pressure you put on yourself.
Genuinely the most nervous I've ever been. I had one day on a Netflix thing in Prague, I think it was. And the cast were all under 16 in this particular scene. So it's these young kids who are doing absolutely amazing. Mm. They've got loads of dialogue. They're on this bench. Mm. Halfway through, I have to walk in and tell them all to shut up, essentially, and then walk back out. the nerves I felt, because I'm like, well, they've got all of this dialogue, all of the stuff they're putting through. Yeah. All I've got to do is pop up and do my one thing.
That's it.
If I get it wrong, and you feel it feels fake. As I said, you can't do anything with the character. It feels like you're walking in a Scroobius pit going, stop talking, everyone. And it's like, it's, yeah.
And you don't, and also it's sort of the background of it as well. The background colour is, you know, you get flown out for one day. I had one, I was flown to LA for a day on Torchwood, and I'd had a bigger part in that, but there were still a couple of episodes that I didn't have much to do. And that was okay because I knew the crew. When you don't know the crew, everyone's very nice. Yeah. It's not because they're not pleasant, but they've all bonded. They're all a gang. You're walking to someone else's office. You are walking to someone else's office, doing a massive party trick, you know, 15 keepy uppies in a row, and then leaving. And it's...
Yeah.
And if you can't do 15 keepers up in there, then why are you even here? It's horrendous.
On this Netflix one, weirdly, it made it worse because we're in the green room and one of the actors was a fan of the podcast. So all the talk beforehand had been about me. Everyone like, oh, you should hear this. Oh, you should do this. So I'm then built up. And it's weird that I've been flown out for literally a brief walk-on park kind of thing. It kind of added to the pressure, because it's like it was as if I was a big deal.
Yeah.
And it's pure chance. Like, the podcast, people who are into it are really into it, but it's not an off menu or whatever else that's got millions of listeners.
Oh, come on, so it's the one thinking of them man's off menu, mate. It's the thinking man's off menu.
But it's one of them. It just added to that pressure, because now it's like, oh, Pip's here. Oh, God, Pip's here. And it's like, I've just got to walk on and go, keep it down, or whatever the line was.
That is my nightmare. People with high expectations of me is my nightmare.
Find us on Twitter and Instagram. At Toasterpot is the main way trying to jam. It's simple like a Sonic filled with cheese and ham. At Toasterpot, I swear it's not a scam, I think.
A cultured left foot, the 11 elements of footballing greatness. Tell us about this, if you can remember this one.
That is, yes, that's a book by Moose Rock Wonga, who's a friend of mine, and it's one of the best sporting books ever written.
Oh, really?
Because Moussa, he now writes loads of sporting stuff. He hosts Stadio. He's co-hosts a lot of Ian Wright's Righty's House podcast.
He's on Five Live, isn't he?
Yeah, he's done Five Live stuff. He's absolutely amazing. Life, yeah. But I know him from the spoken word scene.
Yes.
So a wonderfully articulate poet writing a book about football was the perfect combination for me. I've been going to Millwall since I was 4 or 5. Mm. So I've been a football fan, but I'm a bearded poet. You know, it doesn't really fit with the Millwall kind of reputation. And Moussa, as I said, amazing poet and musician, had been at that point offered numerous book deals because he's this amazing writer. No one expected his first book to be about football, but the way he describes, like, a particular run of Messi's or a particular a few different moments from Zidane, like the way he describes Zidane's footballing style was, it's not like a Messi or a Ronaldo where it feels as if they're showing off. Zidane feels like he just wants to get the ball from A to B in the quickest, easiest way. He just doesn't have limitations.
Oh, that's such a good
All limitations are removed.
That's such a good way of saying
it's,
it, yes.
It's purely functional. It's not frilly. It's not showing off. It's purely functional.
It's
he just doesn't have the limitations.
Pure need with no limitations. Yeah. That's genius.
Yeah. And it's beautiful. And it's, it's an amazing book. And Moose has gone on to write numerous books. He's now one of the most respected political commentators and all sorts of other things. He's astounding. But that was his first book.
I love the idea of articulating the art and poetry of good football, of any good sport. Because sport, for some reason, certainly when I was a kid, you either were arty or you were sporty, the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I wish, I think that's changed. I hope that's changed. But the poetry of when I watch, I watched Liverpool Spurs the other night. I was in the Kop. And I just welled up. It was just amazing. Just the sheer force of all these people. And when we equalised and, random Scousers grabbing me and just this kind of visceral, like nothing else on this noise. I just looked up and I could see the corrugated roof of the Kop. And I looked up and I thought, this is almost an out-of-body experience. And
mate,
people need to understand that. It's not some stupid, simple, oi, 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 lads. It's not that at all.
I completely feel it. My relationship with football has changed over the years a little, in recent years, but still, for a long time, exactly that. I want people to understand the beauty of it. Like, And when my parents split up, football with my dad was a really important part of my life, particularly Boxing Day. Boxing Day, we'd do Christmas with my mum, and me and my dad would go to Millwall on Boxing Day. And it meant the world. But for blokes from Essex to have somewhere where they can connect, where you're facing forward,
yeah,
so you can have big conversations and not have the awkwardness of eye contact.
Totally.
And one of the most emotional moments in my life was at Millwall. Neil Harris was, I think, our top goal scorer of all time already. And then he got a testicular cancer. He'd taken over from Teddy Sheringham as top goal scorer of all time. He got testicular cancer and was out for a good year or so. And Millwall stood by and supported and paid his wages. And then he came back. He got over it. He beat testicular cancer and he came back. And he had a few games and he wasn't quite where, you know, he had been. Obviously, it takes a bit of time to get back. Yeah. And I remember the game where it might have been he had to score to become the top goal scorer of all time or something. But I remember he hadn't scored since coming back. And in my memory, we passed it round almost every player in the team in the box.
Yeah.
Loads could have tapped it in, waiting for Neil to get in position.
Get it to him.
Then it, and the crowd just on the edge of their seats. And then it got to him and he scored. And the Millwall players lifted him up and brought him over to the home fans.
Oh, my God.
And there were tears. It was so beautiful and emotional because it was this long-term story of a beloved player who came from non-league to Millwall, became our top goal scorer of all time, and then had something horrific come out of left field and could have killed him, could have ended his career. Mm. And then, no, he comes back and it was... It's glorious, man. Yeah. It is poetic and it is
totally
a beauty.
It's a Greek myth. It's everything about it is just fantastic. I love all these elements to it, and it's become more and more so now that people write around the sport and not just the basics of it and look into the higher emotions of it. So that's A Cultured Left Foot, The 11 Elements of Footballing Greatness by Musa Okwonga. That looks fantastic. I didn't know about that book. I didn't realise he even wrote. That's how stupid I am. I've heard him on Five Live Loads, but I will be looking into that. That is great. So let's skip on ahead a bit now. We'll go into 2009. Oh my God, this is amazing. You have bought Family Fortunes, the interactive DVD game hosted by Vernon Kay. You've bought it not once. You've bought it not twice. You have bought it on three separate occasions in December. 2009. Happy Christmas.
I have no idea what that is. I'm pretty sure I don't own it, but why would I have bought three? This is obviously gifts. I do briefly remember, again, this is still kind of the early days of DVDs. Mm. I do briefly remember having some fun when DVD games became a thing.
This is a DVD game, and, mate. Yeah, it's Christmas time. You've got, hang on, let's be...
But three?
Be fair to yourself.
How much did I enjoy it to go, everyone needs to have one of these.
Oh, my God. So here we go. Look, we've got a Marilyn Monroe black phone sock. This is 19th of December 2009. So this is not, I wouldn't say a phone holder. This is literally a sock that you put your phone in and leave your phone in.
And this is December, right?
September.
September. It's even more mysterious. I was going to say that has to be a Christmas present.
Well, it's early if it is.
For my partner at the time, but I'm not that organised to be getting presents in September.
It's pretty extraordinary. You've bought on the same day you bought Negative Space by Noma Bar.
Right. Amazing book, amazing artist. Yeah, makes... around then, I'd stopped doing stencil art. So I used to be, kind of the first time I used the name Scroobius Pip was on walls that it shouldn't have been on. So I was obsessed with the simplicity of shapes and how much you could get, how much you could tell from four or five shapes. Like a few of my stencils would be portraits of actors, all sorts of different things. And there'd be maybe six blocks of black in there, yet you could recognise them completely. And I remember finding Noma Bar, and it is all kind of, it's all outlines, all the briefest of things, yet you know exactly who it is or what it is. So,
that's what this...
That will have been me trying to be a little bit, I'm into art. I'm learning about art now. I'm a bit of an art guy. You know?
You've dabbled, haven't you? You've dabbled in so much stuff. So you did the... I mean, would you call yourself... Is stenciling technically a graffiti artist? Is that what you'd have called yourself?
Yeah,
did you get in trouble? That's my sort of... My dead straight repressed middle class upbringing just says straight away, but hang on, you'll get told off, Scroobius. You can't get told off. What are you thinking?
I do it under cover of night. Oh. There was, again, I'm sure there's a statute of limitations now. If not, this is all just character. this is all character work. Towards the end of my stenciling career, I'd do it in a high-vis jacket with a nightcap on, because that's the uniform of builders, and I just look as if I'm meant to be there. I do it with rollers instead of spray cans, so it looks like I'm official.
But this comes back to something which I've spoken about before: high vis jackets. You stick a high vis jacket on, especially in this country, I could walk into Downing Street.
Yeah, it's hiding in plain sight, isn't it?
You go and organise queues. Just go and get high-vis jacket on. Just go and shout at queues. Move around there, please. And people will do it. People will do it. It's control. Yeah. All right, fine. So that's 2009. Family Fortunes, real highlight for me there. Let's move on to 2010.
Weird that I bought three and I've got no clear memory of it. That's the bit that really gets me.
Oh, look, we've got a rechargeable fluorescent lantern. Is this to help you with your stenciling career here? This was bought on the 29th of December. So
rechargeable. So that's probably for music videos.
Okay.
Because all my music videos we shot just me and my mates. It was around 2000. When was this?
This is beginning of 2010 or end of 2010. End of 2010 we are now. End of 2010.
So we would shoot a lot of our own music videos. And my mate Tom, who was a photographer, didn't have any video experience, started being cameraman for it, but we couldn't afford proper kit. So for lighting and stuff...
Mate, you've bought a flip.
A flip, yeah. Well, there you go. Again, exactly. There'd be a lot of that for documenting tour stuff. Yeah. So that, I'd imagine, it'll all be a music video type. Yeah. Let's charge things up and see what we can make.
And when you made the video for Thou Shalt Always Kill, which is... it's iconic. It's incredible. Was that literally just the two of you, or how big were the production values for that bad boy?
So that was £200, and we borrowed 100 of it because we didn't have £200. So we borrowed 100 off Dan's mate Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for Mike.
And that was it. It was a guy called Nick Frew, who is again a friend of Dan's, who was a director, and just a load of really creative people helping out. So that was £200, and that's all we had. I went to outdo that when I did Introduction, which was my first kind of solo video that blew up. I had £100 for that. It's like we're going backwards. This was like 4 or 5 years later, and we're going in the other direction.
What is the biggest video that you've done then with the music stuff? Was there a kind of ridiculous production values thing? Because I saw what was that? A Stunner. There's like you in that club. There's loads going on there. That's quite a lot of stuff.
Again, that was so low budget. Me and my mate Tom made that. I borrowed the downstairs of the Roundhouse.
Yes.
So that's the basement of the Roundhouse that we got for free. It's a one shot, but we didn't have like any kind of rigging, but Tom had two kids, so we took the seat out of a pram and taped a tripod in. So that smooth movement is a big wheeled pram with a tripod taped in and the camera on that, all gaffered up, and then he's just pulling this pram
he's
around,
literally pushing his kid's pram around the basement of the Roundhouse for a music video. It looks wicked.
And how it's again, it was amazing. That maybe we had a grand budget for that at best. So all of our stuff was exactly that. Our You Will See Me one, which looks high end. A mate of mine worked in a theatre in Harrow. And he was like, we've got a set of a bedroom. Do you want me to put it up when we closed on Sunday or whatever day it was? So when they were closed, we just came in and had 2 days making this music video, and it's this amazing set. It looks beautiful. Obviously had all their lighting, but that was completely a blag. We didn't have the budget.
You know what? When you do stuff like this, when you're blagging and you're borrowing, and I've done things like this myself, and you cobble stuff together, and this sounds really pretentious, but the artistic purity and the intention of it remains really on it, and you're really focused.
Yeah.
And as soon as you've got money and budget and people, execs and whatever who start coming in with opinions, the whole thing gets completely diluted. But when you're doing it like that, we've got a day, it's your baby, what do you want to do? You're never going to replicate that. It's almost worth, even when you're successful, just do things for no budget.
It's weird. As we have this discussion this week, I'm starting to shop about a script I've written. And it's the first one I've written that's back to that. It's in the pitch document. I kind of say, look, it's not necessarily got any commercial appeal, but we can make it really cheap and I think it will be beautiful. All the other stuff I've written and had in development is more traditional. It's more, well, we're going to need a big production. This. This is the first one I've written that I'm like, it's close to being able to be made by me and my mates, but it's not quite there. Do you know what I mean? It's the closest to all the music videos that I've done, because it's like, right, it's just a concept and it's so achievable for such a low price. But yeah.
So when you're bandying that about, are you just sending that to producers or are you like looking for a little bit of budget to do it? Is that how it works?
Yeah, it's going to production companies.
Right.
It's going to need a bit of budget, but...
Yeah, but...
Yeah, everything else I've had, it's been like, we've either been in talks with Channel 4 or Netflix or whatever else, and then it's not quite got there. Whereas this one, I'm like, if we can get just one of them on board, then it can be fun. Like, it's affordable.
Although, to be honest, mate, if it's low budget, Netflix could be perfect for it now. That is a Netflix joke, ladies and gentlemen, that is a Netflix joke. They're fucked. It's my made water toaster. Oh, it's my made water toaster.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
4th of March 2010. Look, here we are. Clang the bell, ladies and gentlemen. It happens every episode. He's bought his own goods. Poetry in Emotion, the illustrated works of Scroobius Pip by Scroobius Pip. There we are. Good. We love that. We love that on this show.
I will have reviewed it, surely.
If you haven't, do bear in mind I'm logged into your account as we speak.
Perfect.
And I can definitely help with that. And look, the reviews are all... Oh, mate, I don't want to blow too much smoke up your bum, but the reviews are contemporary poetry at its best. Amazing. Amazing, a must-read and a must-have. Stunning. And those are all by Mr. and Mrs. S. Pip. That's that one. This one's by Boobius Scripps, written this one. David Meads has done one here. Lovely. Genuine people.
You see, that was a really fun... Again, as anyone will... excuse themselves on their own purchases, and it's true, it's always for family members to give a signed copy or a friend or whatever else, because you don't actually have any yourself. But that was a really fun one, because again, a little bit inspired by Musa. At that point, I'd been approached by numerous people to do a book of poetry, and I was like, I'd feel like a fraud because I didn't grow up reading books of poetry. So when someone, I think an artist just illustrated one of my poems, and I went, oh, hang on, I have grown up reading comics. So I approached Titan, who in the UK put out The Watchmen and numerous other things, and said, look, here's a few examples. I want to do a graphic novel of poetry. So my poems are turned into short comics. And yeah, that's kind of what we came up with. And yeah. It worked.
So nice. So good. And look, we're going into 2011 now. The purchase numbers go up. So we're up to 43 orders in a year.
Okay. Okay, that's still tame.
Still, it's only 2011. We've still got time, mate. We've still got time.
Yeah.
What's this? The Burra EM35 Electronic Stimulation Unit. This was £37. Bought in July 2011.
And what is it?
Oh, it's an abs trainer, mate. It's an abs trainer.
Abs trainer, yes.
Here we go. Yeah. Talk to us about your abs.
I got one of those abs trainers. Years later, unrelated, I got abs. But completely unrelated, because electrocuting yourself to try and get abs is a ludicrous idea. But I remember I had a flat at that point, and I remember I would use that daily, and I quite quickly got up to the highest setting. Oh, mate, it's a terrible idea. It's a stupid, stupid thing to do.
Does it make you flinch? Are you just sort of doing that?
Yeah, it just tightens up. That's exactly what it is. And I get the logic as well, because it is. It's tightening your muscles repeatedly. But years later, so more 2017 or 18,
yeah,
I actually got into fitness and learned that
it's diet. You don't get abs. It's pure diet.
It's diet. It's, yeah. And if you're doing shoulder exercises right, like I do a lot of kettlebell stuff. If you're doing shoulder exercises right, you're working your abs as well. If you're doing box jumps, you're working your abs as well. It's not about sit-ups and electrocuting yourself.
Can you imagine walking into a gym and just seeing different versions of this, people doing their biceps and people doing their legs?
But also, imagine, up until now, I would guess maybe one person ever knew I owned that.
Yeah.
Because my partner at the time would have known, I'm sure. Yeah. But that's not the kind of thing you talk about, is it? That's not the kind of thing you go, I've got this, because it feels, particularly in the arts, it feels boringly aesthetic and egotistical to want to have abs. I'm now on the thing of, if you want to look good, look good. If you don't. It's all, I don't think there should be any shame in either. I think it's fine to go, I want to have abs and sexy shoulders.
I think our sort of modern relationship with bodies and, you know, the anti-body shaming thing, which is brilliant in terms of... what are perceived as negative things. It goes both ways. If you want to be vain, then that's now much finer than it used to be. Definitely.
Mate, honestly, the benefits to my mental health when I'm in reasonably good shape. Yeah. And again, I'm not in amazing shape, but I always say I try to keep a 6 or 7 week intense program away from being in movie shape.
Yeah, yeah, nice. Nice.
So
I'm ready to strike, but I need 2 months.
I'm within reaching distance. Yeah. I'm not going to keep at that level. I'm not an athlete, but I'm within reaching distance of if a role comes in and they say, you're going to be naked. It's like, right, give me time. But yeah, it is good. For me, again, I hate the fact that it affects my mental health, but
yeah,
if I'm looking all right...
Yeah,
if I walk past a mirror in the morning and go, "Oh,
who's that guy
looking well?"
Yeah,
it gives me that hit of dopamine or whatever it is, and yeah,
of course, it's much better than being electrocuted.
Yeah, it's a lot better than being electrocuted.
Famously, quite bad for your mental health.
Imagine me in my first ever flat, living on my own, electrocuting myself of an evening, probably eating a tub of ice cream as I'm doing it.
I love it.
Idiot.
Oh, it's so good. And so by this point, what's going on with music versus acting versus podcasting? Where are you at in the sort of...
So we 2011, did you say? So I will have just launched my solo career. So I would have just turned 30.
Mm.
So that again explains things like ab machines, trying to keep something alive.
Yeah.
So yeah, I will have just released my solo record on my own label. So a weirdly stressful time, because it all seems dreamy and idyllic, but as you'll know, anything like that, it's a bed of admin.
Yes.
You know, the artistic side of it is exciting, but running your own label, it's a bed of admin, and it's an uncomfortable one.
And boring. So it would have been so boring. All the admin. Yeah. Oh my God.
All of that. So I wouldn't have moved into acting yet. It was a while after this that the aforementioned Paddy Considine and Simon Pegg and Riz Ahmed kind of all nudged me and said, clearly you love acting. Like, why aren't you doing that? And it was purely a imposter syndrome. I was like, I'm not an actor. I've not gone to drama school and all that. Mm. So it was years later that I had Paddy on the podcast, and he was like, as soon as we finished, he was like, your excitement over all of the little nuances. Why aren't you doing this?
Yeah. You get it. You get it. You
yeah,
love it.
Yeah. So, it's just, so yeah, a long way off of that. The podcast hadn't happened yet.
Okay.
I think I started my radio show around 2013 or 14, maybe. Okay. And I did that for a year and then started the podcast. So I think I started the podcast around 2016, maybe.
Okay. So we're just pre that sort of stuff. And then we've got, yeah, lots of kit as well. The Zoom H4N, this is an audio recording device, aka a microphone, but sort of it looks like a sort of old bricky phone. This is 4th of January 2012, and the quality of recording on that is probably the same as what I've got on my phone now, and this costs £281.
Yeah, I wonder what that would have been for, because again, it will have been for kind of on the road type stuff, but I wasn't doing the podcast at that point. So
if you're writing something new, is that, do you do like audio notes for yourself?
No. Tell a lie. In 2011, I made a feature film that I've never really told anyone about because we never got round to releasing it. We've still not got a final edit of it. Weirdly, the editor, I'm seeing him tonight, and a month or so ago, he was like, I'm going to have another a bash at that. I wrote a zero budget, or I think we ended up spending $4,000 or $5,000 to make the whole thing. And that's because the two main people in it, I paid $1,000 each.
Yeah.
And the rest was just smaller people. I didn't pay myself. And it was buying things like that. So it's kind of a documentary and kind of a drama.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I remember in that I had to interview people for that. And that's what I got the Zoom for.
Right.
So it was to interview people,
and
we had a month, and I got my two mates together, and I was all Shane Meadows on it. I was like, look, I've not scripted it, but...
Bloody love Shane Meadows.
I've not scripted it, but I've got it all figured out. And I've now learned, as a writer, I've learned that was my laziness.
Yeah.
I'm not Shane. At some point, we need to get back on that. It's called Sam. So if at any point we do anything with it...
Right. Can I claim...
You heard it here first.
Yeah, exactly. Can I claim some sort of exclusivity? And this was the conversation that just nudged it over the line.
100%.
Because I will die now on that, mate. You know what, though? What you want, what's really enigmatic is you need to die. Because for a film to come out that was sort of on the back burner or in a drawer after you've died, that's A-list, mate. That's
proper but A-list. Also, my thought when he was going to start editing it was a less film something that would fit into it now... And then we can pull a link ladder and say, we've been making this for 12 years.
Done. Yeah.
We've been making we made it for a month in 2011.
Genius.
And a week in 2022.
It was always the plan. Right, so Series 6, Episode 1, Part 1 is done. That was Scroobius Pip. More of him this Friday. We'll be discussing, well, it's just more random stuff. It's such a great episode. I'm so proud of this double bill. It's a really good one. He's such a top guy. Before I go, a couple of bits of business. This is the bit where most of you stop listening. If you can rate and review and all that stuff, thank you. Secondly, I do a golf podcast. I know! Not everyone likes golf. It's called Golf is Ruining My Life. If you're into golf in the slightest, check it out. I think you might enjoy it. And here's a quick trail for a friend of mine's brand new podcast. She's called Katie, and I think you will like this. She is awesome.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, Claire. News flash. Episode 1 of Talking with Cancer launches 25th of May.
And what can people expect?
It's the first time we speak since I found out I have cancer. And it's all about my journey up to diagnosis. There's still so much that's unknown. The doctors seem confused and everything is very complicated.
We talk about how you've decided to face it head on and what a positive approach means to you.
And I realise talking with cancer is for everyone because everyone in some way is impacted by cancer.
You might know someone with cancer or have questions about cancer or might also be dealing with a diagnosis of your own. We hope you'll join us on the 25th of May for our first episode.
See you then. Oh, that's my alarm. That was really bad time. That's my alarm to take my pill, which I've done.
Sorry. Okay. Yeah.
There you go then. That's all the bits of business done for today's episode. See you Friday. Take care. All the best. Kind regards. Lots of love. Thanks for coming.
It's my mate, water toaster. Oh, oh. It's my mate, water toaster. Yeah, yeah. My mate, water toaster. Oh, oh. Toast them all, my love. Thank God. Toast them
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.